May 10th, 1596. We sailed from Amsterdam today, bound to the northeast for Cathay. Willem Barents is our leader and pilot. September 9th. The ice has gripped the ship again, lifting her high into the air. We are trapped and cannot break free. Two white bears visited in the night, but we scared them away with our trumpet and guns. September 11th. We have to winter here. And so, we are building a house. We found wood. Driftwood sent by God, we believe. For there are no trees in this barren landscape.
Welcome to What's Your Map? An Oculimundi exploration. I'm Jerry Broughton. In this podcast, we hear from those who live and love maps, making, preserving, interpreting, and being inspired by them. In each episode, we ask our guests to unfold a map that is special to them and to tell us the stories that lie behind it. To follow the map as we talk about it, go to oculi-mundi.com. Our guest today is interested in the known unknowns of mapmaking, the uncertain grey areas, and how this uncertainty drives the discovery of new knowledge. Dr. Joke van Netten is an associate professor of early modern history at the University of Amsterdam. She writes about maritime history, books and maps, and is currently researching animals in history and on maps. Joke, welcome to What's Your Map?
Thanks. Wonderful to be here.
It's great to have you and to find out about the map that you've brought with you today. Tell me about it.
What I brought is a map published in 1598 in Amsterdam. We can just call it the 1598 map of the polar regions by Willem Barents. And it's based or partly based on three voyages in the mid-1590s. And so we see where they go. And if you look more or less in the middle of the map, you see a house. I don't know any other example of an individual house on a map of this scale.
Where is the house?
Here you have Nova Zembla. And then at the northeast corner of Nova Zembla, there is, if you zoom in very well, you see a house.
It's just there, so it's
yes.
Sort of middle right.
And in Dutch it says Het Behoude Huis, which sort of means the safe house or the saved house. And this is where 17 Dutchmen survived the winter of 1596-97. 17 started and in the end, 12 got home.
So this is interesting. It's a map which really goes from the bottom left-hand corner. And just describe it to me in terms of what we see right into the center, which is of the North Pole.
So in the center, you have the Polus Arcticus or the North Pole or the Arctic Pole. And so then you have the compass roses.
They're all different.
Of course, since they are all directing to the North Pole, so that's interesting, you have all those compass roses that point to different directions, but of course actually to just one direction. And it's empty, and then you have animals around it, so these are whales or other monstrous fishes.
There's a whale, they're mixed, aren't they? Because some look familiar and some look unfamiliar. Are these, you see just by the house that you're describing, are these seals?
You can disagree with me here. But so around Nova Zembla and just to the in between Iceland and Norway, you have walruses and you have polar bears. So the polar bears are my personal favorites. And the difference is that the walruses have tusks. And so here above Nova Zembla, you have the polar bears and they look like dogs.
That's right. So they look like they're swimming.
They're swimming. They're known as white bears, but there are no colors on the map.
They're so cute.
And by then, they're super cute.
Is this the first time that we see polar bears on printed maps?
There are polar bears on printed maps, for example, in Ortelius and Olaus Magnus earlier in the 16th century.
Yeah.
But those polar bears on those maps are confined to Iceland. So we have ice bears in Iceland, and they're only there on ice floes. So this moment, those people from the Netherlands go sailing to China. And on their first trip, so this is the 9th of July, 1594, for the very first time in Dutch history, they meet a polar bear. They don't call it a polar bear, they call it a white bear, and they want to take it home. So they just tell, "Oh, that's cool, it's a monster, we can bring it back to Holland." And they try to catch it. In the end, the bear, so he climbs on their boat, but in the end, more or less by luck, they succeed in killing that bear. So they didn't bring a living monster, as was their plan, but they bring a white furry hide to the Netherlands as a sort of trophy, as evidence, I think. And that's actually where my research started, since I wondered, why didn't they know about polar bears? Or what did they actually know about polar bears? And how did it unfold? So the relation between the humans and the bears in the expeditions, especially now in these days, it is important to research relations between humans and animals to see how knowledge about animals developed and also how relations between humans and animals worked out over the centuries.
Jukka, let's go into the map and think about actually what we're seeing, because it looks familiar down in the bottom left-hand corner. You have Northern Europe because you have Germany, Norway, Sweden, Finland. Over to the right, you have an effect bits of Southeast Asia because you've got Tartary. So that's kind of complicated, but getting into that area of Asia. And then in the top, you've got to the right, you've got the Strait of Anian, and you've got to the left, you've got the Davis Strait and Estotiland. These are less familiar terms. Can you just explain what these are doing and what do they mean within the context of discovery in the late 16th century for the Europeans?
For these people, these were all known lands. So everything that is on the map was known in a way, be it from completely different sources. Like on the right, you have the Cabo de Tabin, so Cape Tabin, and the island of Tazata, which comes from Pliny. So this is first century, 1500 years ago. But this knowledge was still on the map, but this was, since this was the only thing they knew about that place. And then to the left, where you see Greenland, Iceland, Frisland, Estotiland, this was mostly based on also earlier 16th century maps like the Zeno map, allegedly made by two Phoenicians who had traveled there in the 14th century. And so this was the knowledge they had. And then they sailed themselves and they discovered, again, with quotation marks you can't see, and they discovered Spitsbergen. So in
which
the middle,
yeah,
which they called Het Nieuwe Land, so mm-hmm. the new land. Mm. There is a lot of new land and new found land here. And of course, Nova Zembla also means new land. So this shows from a European perspective what they found and what was new for them. And just below the new land or Spitsbergen, you see it's quite small. You see at Vera Island, which mm-hmm. means the Far Island, but it also now is called Bear Island. And this was where in 1596, on the third voyage, they met their first polar bear of the third voyage and they ate him.
Poor polar bear.
And they didn't like it. Maybe this has saved quite a lot of polar bears and all those men that they didn't like the first polar bear they ate.
Why is that?
Because most polar bears carry the Trichinella bacteria, which causes trichinosis in humans, and then they would have not survived the Arctic winter. So the fact that they didn't like the taste of that first polar bear probably has saved them and also brought us this map. It's still called Bear Island. That's the cool part. There are so many names on this map that are still there.
Tell me about the Northeast Passage, because you see in the top right-hand corner this the Strait of Anian. And actually in the left, you see, I guess, the route that would be the Northwest Passage. What is it that's obsessing the European discoverers at this time about trying to get a Northeast or a Northwest Passage, as it were, over the top of the world?
Yeah, that is important to stress. This was not a voyage to Nova Zembla. This was not a voyage to the Arctic or even to explore the Arctic. This was a voyage to China. And China was seen as the richest country in the world. This was where the spices were, other Asian luxuries. This was what the Dutch were after. And the English and the other who's the others who sailed there.
Because the English are involved in this as well, aren't they? So there's John Dee, who's an Elizabethan astrologer, and he's helping Queen Elizabeth think about empire. And there are Englishmen like Petain Jackman who are going up into these polar regions. As you were saying, it's not really about getting to the North Pole in the way that we might, as moderns, think about discovery. It is really trying to get almost round the pole and get to the riches of China. Go over the top, because of course the Portuguese and the Spanish have gone south to do that. So the northern Europeans are like, hello, can we go over the top?
Yeah, and actually they tried everything. So that's why I think the 1590s are the most fantastic decades in Dutch history. So it's not only that they tried this route. There are five routes to China. So you can go around Africa. You can go through the Strait of Magellan around South America. And these routes are known. And then there are the unknown routes, but still probably feasible, northeast and northwest. And then there is the route straight over the pole. And in the 1590s, they try four or maybe five of them, but they just didn't get too straight over the North Pole.
And what do they describe in terms of when they get there? Because the way in which you, particularly you're interested in the animals and the walruses and the polar bears, what is it that they're saying about these animals? Are they describing them in horror? Are they curious? How does this get described by Barents and his crew?
All of the above. And it's also changing over time. And that's mostly the animals, especially the polar bears, are described as ferocious and wild. And so they are part of the aggressive, hostile Arctic landscape. And it's mostly described as, okay, they had to survive the cold and the ferocious wild bears. And I think if you're going to zoom in the text, but maybe also on this map, you see that they're not always ferocious. They can be quite cute. And apart from one encounter with a polar bear in 1595, I said it was a dramatic trip anyway, and two men were killed by a polar bear. It's super traumatic. But afterwards, not one man was killed anymore. They killed 17 polar bears. Mm. And they used it. They used the polar bears to keep warm. They used the fat to burn their lamps. So they had lights in their cabin. So in the Arctic polar nights, they had lights to read. So I think, so this is my point, I think they survived because of the animals, right, and not in spite of the animals.
And are they encountering local inhabitants, or are they completely on their own?
On Nova Zembla, there were no local inhabitants. So maybe that's also an explanation why they describe the animals and their encounters with the animals so much, because there are no indigenous humans.
Yeah.
But they do meet humans on the coast.
There's this sled with the reindeer. Is these reindeers?
Yeah, I think it's reindeers. And it, so they not, meet what it, they called Russians.
It's not Santa Claus, is it? Tell me it's not.
No, I don't think.
Is it not St. Nick?
I would love it to be Santa Claus. No, they meet what they called Russians or Samoyeds. Mm. And it can be different people. But they meet Russians. And there is one cool map story when they go back. So their ship was stuck in the ice. They survived in the end the winter, and then they tried to get back to the Netherlands. So their ship was crushed. So they have just two open small boats. This is a miracle anyway. So Willem Barents died. So even their leader died.
A frostbite or just the sheer...
Scurvy, probably.
Scurvy, right. Okay.
Or a combination of scurvy and cold and many other things. And then they sailed back, and then they are somewhere here on this cape just below Nova Zembla. Mm-hmm. And then they meet what they called Russians, and they try to find out where they are. So this map is made afterwards, but apparently they also have maps with them. And they talked with these Russians, and the Russians said, no, you're not on this cape, you're on that cape. And they don't believe the Russians. And then they bring a map, and they show the map. I even don't know what language they spoke, but they show a map and they look together on the map, and then they believe them.
Brilliant.
So the Russians point to the map, and then in the end they agree on where they are.
This happens a lot, doesn't it? This local knowledge, which we see, we don't see on these maps. So the printed version of the map looks like it's very European, but embedded within it are these encounters which are just hidden.
Definitely on these parts. But that is the difference with the places like Spitsbergen and Nova Zembla. There were no indigenous humans there. So that is what we see is European knowledge and loads of European Dutch names that tell us about their stories.
Before we continue, I just wanted to say that I'm so pleased you're able to join me on my journey into the world of maps, their stories, and the people who love them. If you're enjoying our podcast and don't want to miss a future episode, then please do consider subscribing and leaving a review when you finish listening. And if you think your friends and family might be missing out, ask them to give us a listen too. Back to the rest of the episode. It's a beautiful map. Just tell me a little bit about how you get from Barents being here and perhaps drawing a sketch version, maybe drawing on other indigenous knowledges as well, and how it is then printed and published, because it is, the cartouche at the top is absolutely beautiful. The writing is so elegantly done. This is very, very high-end printing. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so this is printed by Cornelis Klaas in Amsterdam, and he was the publisher of all of these travel journals, mostly accompanied by maps and also larger maps. So he was the top guy in this field. And he knew personally all those people who were traveling, who were finding their ways to China via different routes. And so it also came back to him. And he was there in Amsterdam, close to the harbor. So he was the one, I think, who, when they sailed out and then when they came back, I think their information, their data, their sketched maps, and make it into something beautiful as this.
What are these names, all these capes? You're doing them in the Dutch. So what's significant about the way in which they're being described?
I think part of it, it's describing what they see. So animals, mountains, like Spitsbergen is Dutch for
so
mountains. Yeah, mountains with a spike. But on Nova Zembla, it's referring to animals, but it's also referring to their authorities, like Nassau and the oranges. So it's, they really show that it's Dutch by then. And then it's the emotions. So you have this Hoek der Begeerte, so the Cape of Lust. I don't know, lust maybe for those, all those Chinese riches that they were after.
Okay.
Not completely sure. But you also have Twisthoek, which is the Cape of Dispute.
Yep.
That's where they argued.
And that makes sense, because we all know actually about the Cape of Good Hope, because Cape Town is gives
yes.
you good hope of getting to the riches of the East. So when you see these kind of names, they may seem unfamiliar, but there is a context for how that happens.
Yeah.
And that is connected. I want to ask you this. How does this map influence, I guess, future policy? Because 1598, we're around the time where the Dutch East India Company is about to be formed. The English East India Company comes in 1600. So we don't really think that these maps of the pole might be connected. But are they? Are they connected to this wider way in which you're starting to get global empires, particularly, you know, in Northern Europe, as they start to move outwards, as it were? Are they somehow connected?
They're completely connected. I think this, we should see this as part of the Dutch and also the English colonial endeavors. It's all about extraction the land, extraction of animals. So I think it's not a coincidence that you see those whales here. This is, they discovered whales near Spitsbergen, and just soon afterwards, Dutch whaling took off just hunting these. So we see maybe cute animals, but they see fur and blubber and fat and animals to hunt, to extract, to bring home. And so at the same time, when they sailed here trying to find China, they also sailed through the Strait of Magellan trying to get to the Moluccas and China, and they sailed around the Cape of Good Hope. And that was the most successful in hindsight.
And is this your interest in uncertainty? Because the way in which you've got all the ships, you've got all the animals there, it reminds me of the bit Jonathan Swift later in the 18th century has this bit where he says, you know, mapmakers hate to leave a gap on their maps. And he says, so geographers in African maps with savage pictures fill their gaps, and our uninhabitable downs place elephants for want of towns. That great idea. If you don't know a bit of Africa, just put a big elephant there. And there's a way in which, I guess, are the animals here doing something similar? Or this is your area of interest, isn't it, about animals and particularly the way in which they appear on maps, and also they come between, you know, what's the difference between this period, an animal and a human?
Partly the animals are there because the mapmaker didn't know what else to put there. But then there is a message that it are these animals on these places. And then I'm not completely sure of if mapmakers always want to do something. Because going back to the house, and then just below the house, the coastline stops suddenly. And of course, Willem Barents and the publisher Cornelis Claes in Amsterdam, they knew that coastlines just don't stop, that coastlines always go on. But so this is what I would call the known unknown. He knew that he didn't know how it went on, so he just stopped drawing it. And then when you go to the far right and far left of the map, he had some knowledge. So this was, even if it was first century Pliny or 16th century Italians, he knew something, so it was on the map. But as to the east coast of Nova Zembla, he was completely sure that he didn't know and left it out.
Let's step back a bit and talk about your broader interest in maps. Yes. And also this question about knowledge and you're interested in the uncertainty of knowledge, which always really interests me because, you know, we tend to assume that people either do know or they don't know things in this period. And you're saying actually uncertainty is a much more complex area and a much grayer area, as we've been seeing really on the map, that it's never really finished. And you wrote something really interesting, which I came across, that says, you say, surprisingly, maps do not figure very often in the history of knowledge. And I thought that was a very provocative thing, if I may say, to say. What did you mean by that?
So I started not as a map historian, and I'm still not sure if I am one, but this is my uncertainty, but more as a historian of science, and I prefer a historian of knowledge. And I just realized when visiting conferences that mostly, and just reading, that maps do figure as illustrations, but that mostly historians of maps and historians of knowledge don't talk that much to each other. So that's what I try to bring together.
You work very closely with these maps. You're based in Amsterdam. And mm-hmm. Just tell me a bit about your story in relation to them, because your own history. I believe your father was a biologist, which strikes me as quite interesting considering what you've been talking about with this map. So how did you get into maps?
I wrote my dissertation on Willem Blauw. And the interesting thing is that was explicitly not about maps. It was about Willem Blauw as a publisher of everything but maps. And so I wrote my dissertation trying to explain what else he did.
But then maps got you anyway.
But it was mostly other people around me who saw me as that map girl or doing things with maps since I worked on Blauw. So I was still asked by map people to give talks. And then I said, yeah, but it's not about maps. No, you can tell something else about Blauw, maybe a little bit about maps. In my dissertation, I characterized Blauw as a gatekeeper, a gatekeeper of knowledge. And then I realized when the publisher is a gatekeeper, what did he keep? What was not going through the gate? And then I had a next research project, which was on secrecy and secret keeping, mostly in the Dutch East India Company and the early companies that preceded the East India Companies. So this is, I think, and then there were, of course, maps was one of the things they really want to keep secret. So the Portuguese, they're written, they're textual maps, they're roteiros, they wanted to keep these secrets. So then maps came back in the end.
And what's the next project for you in terms of maps? Where are you going?
So I think I like to stay in the Arctic. So I was invited with a Dutch project that was working on knowledge on China in the Netherlands in the 17th century. And there was this conference in Shanghai and they invited me and I sort of did a prologue to that story. So what actually did the Dutch know about China before ever having been in China? So Willem Barents was one of the heroes of that story. So here where I showed you the house, there is on Nova Zembla, archaeologists later found a book on China, for example. So they knew a lot about China. And I wondered actually later, much later, what did they actually know about the route in between? What did they know about the Arctic, about the flora and the fauna? So actually, while looking for China, I ended up in Nova Zembla. This is a nice parallel with Willem Barents. I was looking for China and I ended up in Nova Zembla and with polar bears.
What a great place to end up. Do you want to go to the Arctic? Have you been?
That is a very good question. I'm not sure if I like the cold.
I think your task is to reach the North Pole and then come back to What's Your Map and talk to us about it.
I would love that.
I think that's a deal. Jukka van Netten, thank you so much for joining me on What's Your Map. It's been a real pleasure. Thank you.
It was lovely. Thanks.
Thank you so much for listening. I'm Jerry Broughton. This has been an Oculi Mundi exploration. The producer is Jill Achineku, and it's a Whistledown production. Oculi Mundi is the online home of the Sunderland collection of antique maps and atlases. You can read more about the Sunderland collection and send us suggestions for future maps to explore at oculi-mundi.com.